Reading from the Narada Bhakti Sutras, text 78. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Ahimsa Satya Shocha. Tayastikyari Charityani Paripalaniyani. One should cultivate such good qualities as nonviolence, truthfulness, cleanliness, compassion, and faith. Om Jnana Primaram Dasya Jnanam Jnana Shalakaya Saksuram Militam Yena Tajmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sapitam Yena Putale Sayam Rupa Kadalayam Tadati Prapadantikam. Vancha Kalpa Kalubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vaivacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Shirasade Gaur Bhaktavinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ramo, Hare Ramo, Rama Rama Hare Hare. So, greetings from Govardhan. I explained before, at least last Sunday, that there's kind of like a small burgeoning community of substantial Vaishnavas from Srila Prabhupada's mission kind of congregated here. And a real absorption in bhakti. I'm living behind the Bhaktivedanta ashram. Many of you have seen that. And there's some really wonderful people congregating. They're going to be at Bhagavatamrita 4 hours a day with ample discussions of points that come up. Yesterday, reading the section of Brihat Bhagavatamrita, I was able to go there for a while. They're reading the section of Brihat Bhagavatamrita where Gopa Kumar is leaving, I think it's Tapaloka, and Mr. Personified Bhakti Shastras are explaining to him why bhakti is better than the process of Gyan. But, you know, when I came in, I don't attend the whole session because I have other spiritual commitments during the month. But, you know, they were dwelling on the question of what does it mean that by chanting the holy name once, one becomes liberated. And then the question is, what does it mean to become liberated? What is it referring to? Of course, my contribution, and they asked me what my view is, of course, it depends on the quality of the chanting. Nam Abbas, there's three stages of chanting. And Nam Abbas, Prabhupada often referred to as the clearing stage, because you're consciously trying to avoid offenses. And such chanting has tremendous potency. It's described just like the potency of the sun at dawn. It's not the full potency of the sun, but heat and light begins to become manifest. And there's a substantial difference than the darkness. The rogues and thieves can no longer do their work. You can begin to function without artificial light. It's called Abbas, the dawn. The Nam Abbas, the dawn of the not name, the reflection of the name. It's a substantial difference. It's a substantial difference from chanting carelessly, inattentively, not being vigilant about your life, especially in terms of criticism of people who are dedicated to Krishna consciousness, dedicated to spiritual life, spreading, not an ordinary thing. And that alone is so powerful. The materialistic tendency, the heart always manifests externally, and when it manifests externally, what's in the heart also increases. It's just like in our relationship with God, we have a feeling in the heart, but it's expressed in service. And our service is a visible offering of our faith, our conviction, our love. And in relationship with our guardians, that's what wins their heart. If you win their heart, then so much good can happen to you. This boy, John Prabhu, in one class said, if you can act in such a way that the heart of a Vaishnav melts, then everything will come out. But what is that way? It's the desire to serve. That's what melts anyone's heart. Why not the devotees? Why not God? When there's love. And real love manifests in the desire to serve others and please others. Anyway, being here and seeing people with a high level of faith practicing Krishna consciousness. I remember I was taking lunch yesterday, and it's also nice to have an ashram where everyone eats together. And that the food is suitable so that everybody wants to. And it's served by such a nice Vaishnav in such a loving and expert way. And somehow when I came late in the first row, I was just sitting right across. I was actually facing most of the senior Vaishnavas. And I felt honored to be in their company. Because I didn't perceive any static in the mind, any ego trip, whatever it is, that can sometimes come. It'd be one of the obstacles to initiative bhakti, one of the symptoms of initiative bhakti, initiative bhakti, not fixed bhakti, comes from the fruits of bhakti itself. When one has some type of position that attracts adulation, facility, respect, if one at all identifies with those things, it will cause a break in their bhakti. But I was looking at the humble Vaishnavas across from me. And it was just so pleasant to sit with that quality of people. And then in the evening, Satchinandana Swami gave me a call, and I went over to his place where he was hiding to share realizations, and was in about 20 minutes, not about 10, 15-minute walk. There's also a community of Vaishnavas there. And I got their sangha. And that's why we go to holy places. I forgot what commentary that is. It says, we can't appreciate much, but those who do come here. And therefore we go. We go to the holy places more than anything else to the association of advanced devotees who live in those places. But they can give so much by their conviction and realization. I can see it. I can feel it. There are people that are really deeply, deeply fixed in Krishna consciousness. And ya vilashita shunya. They are fixed. They're not distracted. I'm thinking of one wonderful devotee who's really does a lot of wonderful outreach. Never looks at the news. So how can he do that? He just doesn't want to be distracted. So how can he do that? Well, he told me, what's ever important will come to one anyway. So he does know what's going on. But it comes to him. Another Vaishnava was describing to me, I think he said it was a book by Jack London. Maybe it was a novel. And it was about when there was a gold rush and most people were just, you can make your living working in factories. So this golden opportunity. And when it was described in the book, it described that some people didn't even sleep. It was such an opportunity that they would just wanted to sift the gold. And they didn't want to lose anything. So he described that that's how he takes his spiritual life, that there's an urgency. Gradually, so many things naturally become reduced because he doesn't want to waste the valuable gift he has of the human form of life, which has the of all species of life, it's the only species of life that really has a faculty to act according to judgment instead of impulse, and to act for the better. So in that way, it's kind of inspired. I also went into Vrindavan for one night and 2 days. My nieces arrived, and really wonderful just seeing how open-minded she is. Okay, now let's discuss the verses today. We're in the part of Narada Bhakti Sutra. We're getting towards the end. And what Narada is doing is I think it's something like when you're getting towards the end, watch out for the last snares of Maya. It's always described that, bhakti and perfection in bhakti is what? Anyabhilashita. There's nothing else in the mind. One has to be determined and fixed from the platform of the heart. So there's always tests to help us understand what level we're at, and also to help us to help increase the determination that is needed to actually achieve perfection. To actually break that knot of false ego that binds us to the non-devotional conception that I am the body, I am the controller, I am the enjoyer. And until that is broken, until that is broken, two doubts remain. Is it true? Is it true? And the second doubt is, can I attain it? Of course, on any spiritual path, by individual effort, the doubt of success has to be substantial. Really, really. Especially today, we do not have strength for perfection, for samadhi. Put Krishna in the mind for 128 minutes without any other single thought in the mind. Come to a state that you're so absorbed that there's not even thoughts that there's anything outside of your absorption. But the hope of any spiritual practitioner is mercy. That there's some force of power that can give me more than my feeble effort. another question came up in the Sanghas. Why in every path must there be bhakti or worship for perfection? Bhakti is independent of karma or jnana, but karma and jnana are not independent of bhakti. Because every path requires a reciprocation from something above, and that reciprocation requires love, requires some type of worship. So here, the last snares of Maya are being discussed. One is the desire, the tendency to get caught in controversy, argumentation based on your ego. The real snare of Maya is that false ego, the tendency to appropriate things for ourselves selfishly, the desire to be better than everyone, the desire to lord over things and people. So subtle. To meet a person, even an advanced spiritual person, who absolutely has no desire to be in the center, therefore, in the Bhagavatam, in one purport, on the verse, Srinvata Swakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana Hidantisto Yavadvani Vidinati, that by chanting and hearing, God enters into our heart and purifies it. But in the purport, Prabhupada was discussing how even stalwarts on the path fall to the allurements of wealth and the opposite sex. The two main vehicles in which we try to establish the ego, the conception of control and enjoyment. So subtle. And then, so here it says that desire for controversy, for argument, and that feeling in the heart that if I am defeated, I am less, where the real argument, the higher quality argument, is not about winning or losing. It's about finding the truth. Anyway, it's discussing this, and then in the last verse, it dealt with the psychological obstacle of putting off our seriousness in bhakti because of a material situation, because of our anxieties and our stresses and our distress. Thinking when these things get finished, then I'll take the scar attachment. But no. Yeah, the verse is discussing no. Thus, not waste a second. Whatever time is given to you must be used to cultivate spiritual life. Not meaning to neglect our duties. We do our duties in that spirit also. Because if they are legitimately our duties, then they're part of the dictation of the absolute truth, and they're part of the service of the absolute truth. But we don't wait. I think I quoted before in the last class, trust no future, however pleasant. Now, this verse is indicating, last verse was vigilance about material dualities. And this is vigilance to cultivate certain qualities. And I'm going to look at this verse in kind of my own way. I've been reading different commentaries, but I have, one should cultivate such good qualities as nonviolence, truthfulness, cleanliness, compassion, and adi means, and so on. And this is the vigilance I think a spiritual practitioner has. One, the previous verse, the vigilance is, you know, don't waste any time. You know, take the bhakti. And here I think the vigilance is don't neglect core good qualities. Now, because, why? Because there can be a conception in bhakti, and there is a conception in bhakti, that everything will come from bhakti. Everything will come from bhakti. There's a conception like that, and it's true. Vasudevi, Bhagavati, Bhakti Yoga, Piyojita, Janayat Yasu, Vairagyam, Jnanam Chiyarahitakam. Automatically, knowledge and detachment comes from bhakti. Yasyasti bhaktir bhagavat akinchina sarai gunas tattva samasate sara harava bhaktasya kuta mahogana manorate dasati dhavatoke. Yasyastir bhakti bhagavat akinchina. When one who really has that exclusive bhakti, then he has all the good qualities of the demigods. And then there's other verses that say there's so many good qualities. But the most important thing is to surrender to God, because then everything else will come. So, of course, in one sense, this could be a vigilance to check your bhakti. If you think you have high-grade bhakti, are you nonviolent? Are you truthful? Are you clean? Are you compassionate? Are you faithful? Faithful also means religious. So, it's, even when you develop high-grade bhakti, Rag Bhakti, spontaneous bhakti. Really, by the mercy of Guru Krishna, by associating with advanced devotees, something very, very deep may enter in your heart even before you're pure. But then what happens is, but when that happens, you will become pure. And therefore, in our tradition, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati was very, very critical as the teacher, as the acharya. He's very, very critical of those who claim to have higher grade bhakti but did not have basic moral qualities. Of course, there are instances where there's transcendence of what would be considered ordinary morality. I mean, the example of the gopis, if, you know, you got to go a little deeper. They give up everything for Krishna. They're good and bad karma. Leaving in the middle of the night for Krishna. But this is another thing. These qualities one has to have. And of course, we want to see these qualities in a deeper way. We want to see these qualities in a deepest way. Like Prabhupada would often define ahimsa as not causing violence. But he would also include within that not making spiritual knowledge avail to people. Because without spiritual knowledge, people suffer so much. Without spiritual knowledge, people live in the fear of non-existence. You can never have any happiness if you live in the fear of non-existence. It's like a person on death row. Can he enjoy the meal? It's mixed with such duality. Could you think of it yourself? Can you enjoy a meal? Could you enjoy a meal on death row? Would you be very, very excited about it? So Prabhupada would often define nonviolence is not extending spiritual knowledge to others. Before I get delving into these qualities, the point I want to make here is, yes, this verse is here to show us that at higher grades of bhakti, we do develop these qualities. And also, we have to be vigilant to cultivate them. True that deep devotion will carry us to the higher realm. But without some understanding of the appropriate decisions in your life, you will take decisions that move you off the path. Bhakti will carry you back on that path, but you've wasted time. This is like the story of Gop Kumar. he met his guru, who then went in ecstasy and left, but he got the mantra, the Gopal mantra. And the mantra was touching his heart with an attraction for Gopal. And because he took that mantra to heart and always chanted it faithfully, his relationship with Gopal was deeply manifesting, that I have a relationship with Gopal. But because he did not have the training of his guru who had left, then he became sidetracked in so many ways. The mantra carried him forward, yes, yasti bhaktir, blessed devi, bhagavati, bhakti yoga, pyoja, janayat, yasu, vairagyam. Yes, these things will come, but you'll be waylaid on the path. And you may even give up your mantra. So there's a necessity to take training and get educated so that you can make the right decisions on the path of bhakti that keep you on the path of bhakti. And some of those decisions are to be vigilant of cultivating certain qualities, like truthfulness. Of course, truthfulness entails two things. It entails knowing what the truth is, and then having the integrity to follow it, regardless of what the consequences are. I always remember my good friend, Professor Bryant, took initiation from a great scholar in Vrindavan, who was loaded beyond our belief. And when he was waiting for his initiation letter, his initiation lecture, his guru just said two words: be honest. Follow and stick to that which you know to be true. Now that you're on the path of truth, stick to that which you know to be true. And then there is cleanliness or purity. It's both external and internal. External, to keep the body clean, etc. This cleanliness is the mode of goodness in relationship to the object of sight. To keep our wealth pure by earning it truthful and without tainting it with encroaching upon the rights of others. To keep our food pure by offering it to God and by getting them cooked purely. To maintain one's conduct is pure by being loving and guileless. To keep one's residence pure being hospitable, and by chanting the holy names, and maintaining our purity of all our actions by following the basic spiritual code, and internally keeping pure. And compassion. Now, there's a field of theology called moral theology, and this is something I've been thinking about later that we have to be vigilant about. I'm not sure I can give a good definition about it, but what happened is I knew this about 10 years ago. I knew this Catholic priest, and he was a very nice man. Somehow he read my ways of devotion. There's a whole story behind that. But he started reading Prabhupada's books, and he was questioning, not in a challenging way, just asking, where is your moral theology? And I was explaining to him how I thought. But what moral theology means is, in your religion of transcendence, how independently our core moral ethical qualities cultivated. Or should they be? One godbrother out here, he told me there was a study that in people who are committed to a particular religion, it said, well, let me say the whole thing before you come to any conclusions. 80% are less empathetic than the ordinary people, and 20% are far more. So what is that, less empathetic? Because when you're in the maturest state of devotion, that's the natural condition of the heart, which is compassion, to feel for others, to feel agonized on seeing the misery in another person, whoever it is, and desiring to remove that. And compassion is the practice of that sentiment. That's compassion. Jiva Doi Krishna Nam Sarva Dharma Sa, the essence of all religion is to show compassion. Of course, you can't neglect the spiritual element in compassion. The spiritual element in compassion is that ultimately people are suffering due to misidentification with the body. And the actions of selfishness that cause karmic reactions . The selfishness being based on those conceptions. So ultimately, the highest compassion has to be in terms of people's ignorance, which is the root cause of their suffering. That being said, if you neglect the physical suffering of people on the basis that they're not the body, on the basis of some transcendent concept, then the heart becomes hard. Bhakti Siddhanta instructed at his Grihastha disciples at that time, when the monks had absolutely nothing, the ashrams, that when you pass a beggar, you should give him some coins. Don't let the heart become callous. So, in a transcendent practice, we can develop a transcendent view prematurely that makes us callous. So, truthfulness, compassion, nonviolence. There has to be some thought given to these things and to the execution of these, and training the mind to act in those ways. Otherwise, they can easily get neglected. And you see that phenomenon too often in religious institutions, where people may set expedient goals or misunderstand the philosophy in a way that they lose sight of these qualities. So here I think the vigilance is, and I think for us also, nonviolence. Nonviolence really means to be free from any desire that will impel us to encroach upon the rights of others to fulfill that desire. And basically, unless you become filled from free from material desire, you won't become nonviolent. So our challenge is we should cultivate and be cognizant, and all through the scriptures, even the Bhakti text, these qualities are glorified. Yes, they will come naturally, but if we are not vigilant in cultivating core mode of goodness qualities, we're not vigilant to cultivate them in their connection to that absolute reality, then you may develop things that actually hamper your bhakti. I'm going to stop now. Anyone like to ask any questions? Anyone please like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hi, Bhagavan. Yeah.
Just one tiny thing. You were explaining the relationship between external cleanliness and the mode of goodness, and you connected that to the appearance of things. Can you just repeat that part?
Yeah, the environment affects our consciousness. And it depends what mode it's in. Now, the environment, when things are just cluttered and not cleaned up due to laziness, the environment becomes in ignorance. And seeing that and tolerating that will shape your mind towards that ignorance. Now, when the environment is kept very, very clean and maintained in that way, then it's in goodness. And perceiving that, perceiving a clean place, will inspire the mind or influence the mind to come to goodness. So, Brahmins in days of yore were always cleaning, because their business was to disseminate knowledge and to learn and disseminate knowledge, which requires goodness, and therefore their whole service was actually cultivating the proper qualities, and they had to. They were very, very clean. I went to a friend's house once in Gujarat, who's from a very high class Brahmin family that really were Brahmins, not just by birth, but one. I've never seen a place so clean. And just by being in that environment, it was a whole block. By being in that environment, automatically you become peaceful. So cleanliness is the object of sight in the mode of goodness, and will impact you, affect you in that way.
And what would you say about a person who, a hypothetical, a person who chants all day but doesn't, let's say, bathe or has a disheveled appearance? You know, it's not clean externally, but because of the chanting, can that person be clean internally?
Well, first of all, the object of sight is not the only object of perception in the environment. It's not the only influence. There's the time of the day, there's the sound of the environment, the sounds of the environment. So there's so many things. But definitely, if the person is not transcendent, that will be having a negative influence and to be weighed against whatever positive they have. But if one is completely transcendent, then they're not influenced by the environment. They're above the modes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, this is Bajrade.
Jai Bajrade. Hey. Hare Krishna. Are you, so you got your electricity back?
Yes, Maharaj.
Okay, good.
Thank you.
Is there gas in New Jersey?
Yes, Maharaj. Yeah.
Okay. Anybody else like to say hello? Okay, we can go for now. Let's go to this deck of the syndicate.